Welcome to TechEd 2013, TechEd Australia, the 20th TechEd Australia. It's a pretty exciting place to be. For those of you here for the very first time, welcome, welcome. For those of you who have come back, perhaps even for the 20th time, it's amazing to see so many familiar faces again. I really appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to this week a great deal. This is actually, you'll hear later on that I was at the very first TechEd in 1994, and I have the bag to prove it. And pretty much all the bags ever since. Not quite, but almost, which is pretty cool. This session is the developer kickoff session. And what we want to do is, and we'll talk through this a bit later on, but basically we're going to take you through a sampler of some of the things that developers need to know. And we've entitled this session, Stuff We Love. We were going to use a different word instead of stuff, but the PR people told us that wasn't appropriate. So we call it Stuff We Love. And this is really all about us giving you the things that we think are cool, because we think that as developers, you should know about them. And we'll see this all the way through, not just TechEd, but all the way through the coming 12 months or so, particularly out of Microsoft in Australia. We're using this theme in our developer relations division in DPE, in Developer and Platform Evangelism, to talk to developers, to talk to consumers, to talk to IT pros, to talk to our partners and customers about things that we think are cool, stuff we love. And stuff we love is really important because good developers are lazy and boastful. I talked about this last year, right? So it's important for us to be able to tell you about cool things so you don't have to invent them yourselves. And it's important for you to be able to boast about things as well. Speaking of boasting about things, the Twitter hashtag's up there. AU TechEd is the hashtag that we're using for the entire show. And then each session has got a session number. In this particular case, our session number is COS002. I don't know how the IT pros got COS001. We might have to have words about them for next year, but we're COS002. I thought about trying to make us COS007, but they didn't like that either. I don't know why. That's the theme music I should have used to come on, shouldn't it? Stuff We Love is really all, as I say, about the developer experience. And I'm going to introduce you to another thing that we're going to be talking a lot about this week and for the next 6 to 12 months. And this is this concept of giving feedback. And you'll see this hashtag a lot as we go through this session, as we go through the kickoff session, as we go through the week. The idea is that one of the things that developers crave, more than anything else, is feedback. But one of the things we're really poor at doing, I think, more generally than just as developers, particularly as Australians, is giving good feedback, about rating things and about giving people an idea about how to do things. So we're introducing this idea of, I loved it, I rated it for apps. And the hashtag loved it, rated it is where what you might put on. I just played this great game, loved it, rated it. I just downloaded this fantastic app, loved it, rated it. And so as we go through this, I'm just going to show you a small montage of some of the fantastic apps, or at least the icons of some of the fantastic apps that Australian developers have developed over the last 6 to 12 months. The one in the bottom right-hand corner, by the way, is one of my personal favorites. I developed it. And the reason it's there is because tomorrow morning, Shane Morris is going to rip it to pieces and tell us all what I did wrong with the UI. So that's a great session if you want to go and work out how to do UI for phone, for Windows, and for other technologies. So that's a plug, if you like, for that. The top left-hand corner, Vaughan Knight's awesome Jelly Run. Have a squiz at that. And a bunch of other really cool things, including one down in the bottom center that I'll talk about a bit later on. Rating is one of those things that we always really need to do, and I want you to encourage this behavior in yourselves and in your users. As a user, make sure you do rate the apps you love. Give feedback to the developers, because they need to know that things are cool. Apart from anything else, giving feedback in terms of ratings encourages people to do updates, to continue to keep the store running and alive. So as developers, it's in our own best interest to keep people rating things and for us to encourage people. And it's also in our best interest to encourage people to send us feedback rather than doing ratings for stuff that they don't like, because then we can have a dialogue with them. And it's amazing how often a negative experience with an application can get completely turned around by having a responsive feedback mechanism. So I know that in a couple of apps I've written, I know you're not going to believe this, but there were bugs. There were things that didn't work. I know. Who'd have thought? But the cool thing was that because we had a mechanism in there for people to send us feedback about how this didn't work, we could engage with them directly, fix it, and get a fix out really quickly. And We turned around their negative perception to a positive perception, and we made them advocates for our app. And that is a really key thing that you can do as part of this process. So if you encourage people to do this and you practice this yourself, then that's really important. And to do that, as a developer, you need to provide your users with a mechanism for soliciting ratings. And there's a couple of great opportunities to do this. One, you can just pop up a dialogue every once in a while that says, give us a rating. And that's important. And there's a couple of really nice frameworks out there to do it. The Telerik guys, John Bristow and the Telerik guys, can show you a fantastic part of their Telerik suite that plugs into pretty much any application and allows you to do that straight away. To pop up ratings the fifth time the thing's launched, or after it's been running for a certain amount of time, and those sorts of things. So you don't have to work hard to get this stuff done, but getting it in there makes a big difference to getting your ratings. And then the other really important thing is having this concept of a feedback alias. Please make sure that when you write your applications, you've got a way of getting information back from your end users. And that can be something as simple as setting up an alias, an Outlook.com alias. It could be something as setting up a user voice forum or a bunch of other things. But it's so important to have a channel to feed stuff back through. So I think you'll see a lot of this loved it, rated it around. But I wanted you to know what was going on behind the scenes of this hashtag. And we think it's a really important thing for developers to be doing as part of their everyday work when they're creating applications. As we were putting today's session together, I thought of all the things that we could be talking about to developers. And when I finished writing that list, I'm not sure I actually ever finished it, but when I had a list that was long enough to fill about 5 days of tech ed, I thought, well, how are we going to do this? Because there is so much that developers need to know. And every year and every 6 months and every 3 months and every month, there's more and more that you need to find out. So really, it's not possible for us to say, in the developer kickoff session, we're going to give you everything you need to know, or even part of what you need to know. What we've done is we've taken a buffet, a smorgasbord of possibilities, and given you a couple of tasters on a taster plate. That's what the tapas bar is up here, by the way. A couple of tasters on the taster plate. I'm not sure who's the deep-fried prawns wrapped in bacon. Who's that? Is that that's probably Ed. But we're going to give you a little bit of some things. We're not going to try and give you a little bit of everything. We're going to give you a little bit of some things. And to do that, we've brought three wonderful speakers from our corp team, people who are deeply involved in writing the actual tools that we use to do our job every day. And we've also got one local speaker who uses those tools every day to write a wildly successful game. And so we're going to have a chat with each of those. Well, in fact, we're going to have a presentation from each of those guys, and I'll have a chat with the local developer a bit later on. So without any further ado, what I'd like to do is invite our first speaker on stage to talk about what's new in Visual Studio 2013 for web developers. And he's going to give you a sneak preview of some stuff that's not available yet in the preview, but that will be in the actual release code. I'd like to welcome the developer of Web Essentials and now Microsoft employee, Mads Christensen.
Thanks, man. Hey, guys. Am I on? All right. So I brought some new toys that I thought I was wanted to share with you. Some new cool web tools, and let's just dive in by creating a new project. So I want to create a new ASP.NET project, and notice here that we only have one single ASP.NET web app option. Oh yeah. Hey, I'm just gonna do that again. Hello, everybody. No. So let me just create a new web project. Sorry about that. So you see here, we only have one ASP.NET project option for you guys. We used to have a lot, now we have only one. So we've been trying to figure this out for a long time, and we've been talking about this concept called one ASP.NET. And this is the first delivery you're going to see on one ASP.NET. So it doesn't matter if you want to use web forms, MVC, web API, or any of these technologies, it's one ASP.NET. So you can create a web forms app with MVC and web API in the same project. You can mix and match exactly as you want. There is only one framework. We also have built in now authentication directly into the project creation step. And this makes it really easy to configure authentication, whether it be individual authentication, like social logins, Facebook, Google, and so on. Or we want to use some of the organizational accounts, such as Windows Azure, Active Directory, and we hook everything up for you. like in your web config and so on. So really, really cool stuff that makes it very easy. So let's just create this project. Now, the first thing I want to do is to make sure that as I debug my application that I can use all the different browsers that I want to make sure my website looks good in all of them. So I'll just go up here in the browser dropdown, and I'll just select Internet Explorer and Chrome and set them as default. And let's just run this app. And you see here both browsers launch. And here are the brand new ASP.NET templates. So again, there is one ASP.NET. It doesn't matter if it's WebForms, MVC, Web API, or so on. This is what you're going to get. It's powered by Bootstrap CSS. So we get very nice responsive layouts that works great on large screens and small screens all out of the box. And Bootstrap is really, really interesting because it's so easy for us developers to create relatively beautiful websites without any effort. So this is a typical Bootstrap layout that I have here. And let's say that I want to change the color of this blue button right here. Now, the way I would do that is that I would go into Visual Studio and I would figure out where in my source code can I find this button. But now we have something called Browser Link. So for those of you who saw Visual Studio 2013 preview, you may have played around with this. But we have a lot more now. So one of the things that we can do is that we can take our browser and put it in inspect mode. It doesn't matter which browser it is, new browsers, old browsers, even emulators and simulators, we can now, with a simple shortcut key, put the browser in inspect mode. So I'm now in Internet Explorer, and I'm going to hit Control-Alt-I, I for inspect. And as I hover around on the page, directly in Visual Studio, we can see where the DOM elements came from. I'm just going to click the button here, and we go out of inspect mode. So the way Bootstrap works is that we're presented with a lot of CSS classes. Bootstrap is just a CSS file, basically. So we're presented with a lot of class names. And here is my button. And you see here I have three classes on there. These are all from Bootstrap. Now, if you're not an expert in Bootstrap, it can get tough to learn all these different class names that you can use. So what we've been doing is to provide full IntelliSense for CSS, and here you see all my Bootstrap class names directly in HTML. And that makes it very easy for me to find out, yet I want the one here called success, and I can just commit it. Now, let's see how this looks in the browsers. And of course, we could just save the file in Visual Studio. I can go to my browsers and hit F5 in each of the browsers to refresh them. But again, we can use Browser Link, this unique connection that we have between Visual Studio and all the browsers. It's basically a WebSocket connection built completely in open standards, WebSocket and JavaScript. We can use this connection now to push data from Visual Studio and out to the browser. So instead of me saving the document and going and refreshing the browsers manually, I'm just going to stay in Visual Studio, and I'm going to hit Control-Alt-Enter. That means browser refresh. And here we go. You see the browser's updated automatically. I did not even have to save the document. Browser Link knows that I just needed to save this file. If I had coded, made the change in a C-sharp file, for instance, it would have known that it had to build the solution before or the project before it would refresh the browsers. It's smart like that. So all this new IntelliSense that we have in the HTML editor is part of a larger IntelliSense effort we're doing by spreading IntelliSense throughout all your client languages, CSS, JavaScript, and HTML. So let's jump into our CSS file. So control comma to open the search field here. And so another piece of IntelliSense that we've been working on is something very, very simple. But it's sort of hard to do if you don't know exactly what you're doing. Now, let me just navigate to the register page here. So what I want to do is I want to take these two password fields the two bottom ones, and I want to give them a different background color. So now I have to write a CSS selector that targets those input fields, specifically only those password types. So I'm just going to start typing my selector. Notice how you get full IntelliSense for all your HTML elements. This data is pulled directly from the new, brand new HTML editor we have in 2013, and it's very, very accurate. So that means that I can open a square bracket here to see all the attributes that I can put on an input element. And it only presents me with the attributes that applies to the input element. So type is one of them. And I say type equals, and now I get IntelliSense only for values that applies to the type attribute on the input element. And I'm looking for the one called password. And here we go. So this is really, really simple. We can get going really quick and hopefully without making any errors like this. So let me just set the background color. I'm going to hit the pound character. And as soon as I do that, we show the color picker. Now, the first couple of colors here are actually colors that we have in the same CSS document. So maybe you know this thing where you have a lot of different shades of the same color because you don't really look what that gray color is further down. And we end up with a lot of different shades of gray, basically. So that makes it really easy. We can also open up the full color picker. And it's just a color picker, as you would expect. I'm just going to use the eyedropper tool to steal the color from the IE back button here. And then I'm going to set the opacity. And here we go. So colors are really, really simple to work with. I want to do one more thing. And that is I want to slightly rotate, just for the fun of it, these two input elements. And I'm going to use CSS 3. And because I'm using CSS 3, I have an issue with being browser compatible. So we've all tried this. We write some CSS, and it only works on a handful of browsers. And there's no real way of knowing that the CSS we write are going to work in all the browsers. So we try to come up with some help here. So I'm going to use a transform property here, and I'm just going to hit tab. And you see, we automatically scaffold out all the different vendor-specific properties you need to make sure it works in all the browsers. And in this case, for the transform property, we need all four. And I can keep typing here, and of course, I get IntelliSense all the way through. Let me set it to 5 degrees. And you see here how that just bubbles through. Now, vendor specifics are always a little bit problematic because what browser supports what and so on. So let me just zoom in here for a moment. If you're curious about those things, the only thing you have to do now is to hover each of these. And not only do we show you what browser it is, but also what version of the browser supports it. Okay. So we saw how BrowserLink could kind of help us out by refreshing the browsers for us automatically. Now, this is CSS. CSS is different. We don't actually have to do a full page refresh to push CSS to the browser. So instead of doing Control-Alt-Enter to refresh the browsers, I'm just going to hit Save in the CSS editor. Let me do that. And immediately, in all your connected browsers, the styles now apply. And I see here this looks pretty good, but I think 5 degrees was not enough. So let's do 10. So I'm just going to do what we can do with all numbers in the CSS editor. I'm going to hold down Control and Shift and do arrows up and down. I'm just going to move it up to 10 degrees. You see here how all the vendor specifics, they follow along automatically. And I just hit Save. And immediately, I can see the result. So pixel pushing in the browsers, making sure it works in all the browsers, is really, really simple now, thanks to the new CSS editor and BrowserLink. So there's one thing here I want to change on my page. And this is my name here, application name. I just want to change it to something that I find more appropriate. So what I could do is that I could go into inspect mode again, figure out where is this HTML that generated that name, and then change it in VS. But now I can do something a little bit more fun. Instead of going into inspect mode in my browser, I can go into design mode. So this is Control-Alt-D, D for design. It looks very similar. As I hover, it shows exactly where these things are. And notice as I hover application name, this is a C-sharp action link in MVC. This is not HTML. This is C-sharp. I'm now just going to click my DOM element in the browser, and it becomes editable. So now I'm still in the browser, and I can just type. And notice what happens. And it's automatically persisted. So I'm still in my browser. I haven't entered Visual Studio yet. I'm just going to hit F5 to reload the browser, and my changes persist. If I want to undo all this stuff, I can always just go back to Visual Studio and undo all my steps here and use browser link again, Control-Alt-Enter, to refresh the page, and we're back to where we started. So this is just a little teaser of what we have of new fun stuff. But basically, we're finally delivering on the promise of one ASP.NET. You're going to see way more coming down the line there. We also, and with authentication, we also have IntelliSense everywhere. So this is a new concept. It was the highest voted feature by you guys to have IntelliSense everywhere, flowing seamlessly between CSS, HTML, and JavaScript. And finally, we're introducing browser link, which is going to make things that were just impossible to do before possible. So come to my session tomorrow here in this room at 9:45, where we're going to go really deep on some of this new web stuff. There's way more than I showed you. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
So this is awesome stuff. I'm so excited about this. I've always been, I have to say, a non-web developer. I've been the XAML guy. I've been the WinForms guy. I've been the FoxPro guy. Don't tell anyone that, but that's what I was. This is kind of making me excited about being a web developer or a HTML slash JavaScript developer. And this is the sort of technology that's coming out of the company at the moment that makes our lives as developers so much easier. Can you tell I'm super excited? Okay. So that's all fine for client and front end stuff. But of course, as we all know, developing software is not just about developing the front end. Developing software is about collaborating with your team. It's about gathering requirements. It's about working out what to do when. It's about it's really all about that whole process of going from inception through to delivery and even further through management and monitoring and then feedback through the loop again. And so to do that, of course, we have another great suite of tools in Visual Studio, the Team Foundation Service and the Team Foundation Server. And to talk about some of the great new stuff in Visual Studio 2013, from that point of view, I'd like to invite Ed Blankenship up to come and have a few words.
Hey, great, thank you. All right, thanks a lot. It's good to be here in the Gold Coast. And we've seen a lot of great stuff in Visual Studio today, so it's really good. But really, we do want to think about all of those other things. You know, as you move from a one-person team to a multi-person team, you have all these other activities that you now have to start to collaborate on. And we call that the application lifecycle management cycle. And so that's from everything from defining what you want to build, to developing it, to testing it, to delivering it into your dev and test environments, and then also to production, and then ultimately to learn about what's going on in production so you can feed that back into new requirements that you continue to go on the cycle with. And so we have a family of products, the Application Lifecycle Management family, the ALM family of products. And really at that core is Team Foundation Server, which has been traditionally available, as well as Team Foundation Service. And the only difference there is that Microsoft hosts Team Foundation Service at tfs.visualstudio.com. And really, these two products have everything that you can imagine. So you think about the planning and project management aspects. We'll look at a few of those today. Source control repos, so traditional version control repos, as well as distributed version control repos using Git. So we have that available up to date on Team Foundation Service, and that'll be available in Team Foundation Server 2013. So you'll be able to use Git as your version control system. We have work item tracking, so bug tracking, task tracking, all of those kinds of artifacts If you're using Team Foundation Service, you can really set up a one-click continuous delivery mechanism to Windows Azure. And as well, you can use automated builds. So whether those are automated build servers that are sitting on-premises, or we actually have an Elastic Build Cloud available for you, too, where we host the build servers and you just tell us what builds you want to use. And finally, we also carry all the test case and stakeholder feedback. We manage all of that as well. And so really, it's an open platform. We want all development to be able to be used, be done with Team Foundation Server and Team Foundation Service. So bring your own IDE, whether that's Visual Studio, Xcode, Eclipse. You can use that with Team Foundation Server and Team Foundation Service in any platform as well. So I want to actually show you a little bit about Team Foundation Service really quickly here. So let me sign in. All right. Here we go. So if you haven't signed up for one, you can go up to tfs.visualstudio.com. We have a link right up here. Sign up for free. We don't ask for a credit card or anything. Right now, we're in a preview. But we have an SLA around keeping it up to date and everything. The other thing we also have is we will always have a free plan, so teams up to five will always be able to use the service for free. And that includes private repositories, too, so that's a little bit different. And also, for all of our MSDN subscribers, this is going to be an added benefit for all eligible MSDN subscribers as well. And Team Foundation Service is great because we host it. It's very secure, and we take care of all the infrastructure needs. We take care of keeping it backed up and disaster recovery planning. And it's also the easiest way to get features first. So we actually deliver new builds to Team Foundation Service every 3 weeks, which is on our 3-week sprint cycle. So you don't have to wait for the next version for it to come down. So some of the features that I'm going to mention are actually already up on the Team Foundation Service today that you can take advantage of. Some of them, if you want to use them on premises, will be in Team Foundation Server 2013. So you see, I've got my my home screen here. We've got team rooms now. You can see a little bit about what you have here. We're going to pop into our Agile planning backlog area. So this is the traditional one you've been used to. And you'll see you can, this is product backlog items. So I have, my team also manages bugs on our product backlog. So you can move in here, you can reprioritize. We'll also do forecasting to see when a product backlog item might actually make it into one of your sprints. So, you know, I might be able to move this up. This is great for business users to see kind of capacity and those kinds of things. Let me move that one back up here. The other thing we've done is as you start growing, you start to have product backlog items that you need to start tracking amongst multiple Agile teams. And the way that we can go about doing that is actually have it a higher level up. And what we've done is we've done Agile portfolio management by being able to also track higher level epics, if you will. So in this case, we call them features. And you can capture those and be able to track those amongst all the different backlog items. And it's really easy. You can come over here. You can turn on the mapping panel. And then you can bring each of these over to the relative feature backlog item that you want to put on there. So we have everything that we've had before in here. You start to think about our Kanban boards. Those are customizable now, so you can have as many different columns as you want without having to customize the process template or do anything like that, and you'll be able to move those over and see where they are. We've also added color as well, so you can see on here the regular product backlog items are blue, and then the red ones are actually bugs, so you can kind of see where those are going as well. Another thing we've introduced is actually the team room. So the team room, imagine the scenario where, as a product manager or program manager, you're in meetings quite a bit. You might be out on vacation, and you want to know what's happened with a team while you were gone. So you can come into the team room, and the team room's a really good place for actually being able to to capture what's going on with the team. And so it's not only a chat log of what's going on, but it's also what's happening in the system. So you can put code reviews in here. Anytime a work item gets assigned to someone or changed, that's put in there. These are rich, deep links, change sets. You can see builds. I mentioned code reviews as well. We can also have conversations. So you can see, said, hey, Martin, how's the fix for bug number 33 going? And so that goes in right there. But you know, I can go in and say, at mentions and those kinds of things, and that will show up in bright orange to Martin whenever he goes back to the team room. So we have that as part of Team Foundation Service right now, and then Team Foundation Server 2013 when we come back. So we've got quite a few things in here for Team Foundation Server. Oh, one second. The other thing that we announced a couple of weeks ago is that we've closed on the acquisition of InRelease, which is a release management product suite. And so now that you've put your app together, you're building it, you're testing it, you now need to get it to the different environments in a reliable way. So what do we do today? We have, you know, either manual deployment steps or we have crude automation. So what we've done is within InRelease, you will be able to model your automated deployment using reusable activities. And we're smart about it as well. We know that different environments have different steps that you need to do, so in different configuration variables. So we go in and actually capture that as well. The other thing that you some teams need is they actually have, here we go. They actually have a way of, there's a people process around releasing. So you think about all the acceptance criteria and the approvals that are necessary in your release process. So you'll be able to go up there, set those up. It's got emails to go out to approvers and have those go. And then those can queue out deployments of the same build to multiple environments as well. So you'll see us incorporate that newly acquired IP into Team Foundation Server and Team Foundation Service over time. But one thing we will do is we will package in release as part of the Visual Studio 2013 and TFS 2013 RTM release. So you'll get that as part of that. So feel free to get started with that today. We have a preview version. It's up at www.microsoft.com/visualstudio/in-release, and you can take a look at that. All right. Now, how many folks know about the MSD and Azure benefit? Yeah? How many folks have actually activated it? Okay, great. It's good. That's a better number, better percentage that we've been seeing. So a couple of weeks ago, we actually announced that we would now provide a monetary credit every month for each individual MSDN subscriber. And we've done that because we've heard multiple times that, you know, you imagine yourself as a dev, you need a dev environment, or a tester needs a test environment. And what do you have to do today? You have to go ask IT about, you know, hey, can I get this environment? You know, so they'll tell you, hey, go put in an IT request. And, you know, our colleagues in IT are, you know, overburdened. They're trying to just keep up with production. And so what happens to dev and test requests? They're usually deprioritized, and, you know, you might get them 3 weeks, 6 months later, you know, new hardware, you know, we've heard it all, right? So what we've done is we now have self-empowered every developer and every tester to be able to get the resources that they need. So this is what we've done here is, you know, Visual Studio Professional gets $50 per month for dev test usage. Premium gets $100. Ultimate gets $150. What I am going to announce today is that over the next couple of days, you'll start to see that we're now going to give credits to the Visual Studio Test Professional MSDN subscribers and our new offer, which is MSDN Platforms, and that's designed for the ops personnel who are involved with dev test activities. So we're going to give them $100 per month. And you may be asking me, because I've heard this quite a bit, is, hey, what can I use this on? And I'm going to give you a few examples. So in this case, oh, yay, my session timed out. We actually have, you can use it on anything. So you can use it on virtual machines. You can use it on, You can use it on virtual networking, you can use it on databases, websites, whatever you'd like to. But one thing we have made available to you is in the virtual machine gallery, we actually have a developer workstation. So this is not only a VM template that already has Visual Studio installed, but it also has SQL Server, has SharePoint Server. The other thing it has is it has a folder of PowerShell scripts that allow you to do different activities. Like, for example, we've automated how to get the SharePoint configuration up and going so you can start to get going really quickly. You can join this machine to your domain. You can set up a virtual networking link so you can connect back to on-premises resources like Team Foundation Server or your mainframe or whatever else is on-premises. And so you'll see this. This is a great way to even try out Visual Studio 2013. So this is one way you can actually take advantage of this. And with our new connected IDE experience where you sign in, you'll be up quickly and ready to go within a few minutes with your settings roaming as well now. So we have a few options there for you. Here's some more examples. So for example, one of the things that makes your credit go further is the actual, in those dev test subscriptions, we are going to give you a discounted rate. So anywhere between 33% and 97% off of the normal rates that you would get in the production Azure subscriptions. And we do that because you've already paid for those dev test rights inside of your MSDN subscription, so we don't want you to have to pay for it again. So we've reflected that into the rates that we've provided you. Here's some other examples that you can make, now with those discounts, you can make that credit go even further. So for example, if you've got a premium or MSDN platforms, you have $100, you can actually spin up 3 VMs for 16 hours a day, which you can say, hey, one of them's my dev workstation machine, one of them's a test environment where I may do some manual testing in, another one may be an environment ready to go for any automated test runs, but you can have those running at any time. Another option you have is to use up to 100 Azure websites in a database, and you won't go over at any point in the month with these. So we give you a lot of credit. You're leaving a lot of money on the table if you don't end up activating it. And the one last thing I want to show you really quickly is several people have asked me, how do I actually activate it? Well, if you go into MSDN subscriber account management, you go on My Account, you'll see Windows Azure, you say Activate Windows Azure, and it'll get started. We don't ask for a credit card. You're ready to go, and it'll know about your MSDN subscription. So, all right. Well, thanks a lot. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks. So there's a few things that I really want to call out there. One is this concept of services. So the build service is an incredible thing that I'm really excited about. But setting up a build server, well, let's not say it's non-trivial. It's not that easy, right?
Right.
But the fact is you guys have now got services in the cloud that allow you to build websites, phone, and even now Windows.
Absolutely.
Store apps, yeah?
Yes. And another thing is you're going to see us provide more and more developer services on top of our services platform. So for another example is the load testing platform. You don't have to have a load testing rig anymore. You can just give your load test to us, and we'll do it for you, and you can tell us the parameters around that. So you'll see that more and more as we go through this.
That's awesome, man. I think that's really exciting. Thanks very much, Ed.
All right. Thank you.
So as I have to say that as someone who's been writing some software again recently, writing some serious software again recently, and using the Team Foundation service to do that, it's been a really, I was going to say surprisingly pleasant experience, because all of that stuff that someone else could do, someone else did. And I got to concentrate on the stuff that I was good at, which was writing code. And that all of that, the bits around management and monitoring and updating and all of that of the Team Foundation server side of things was taken care of, which I loved, and the build server stuff too, which was very, very awesome. So that's, speaking of MSDN Azure credits, what are the sort of things you could use it for? Well, dev test is obviously one of those. And to do the automation of a decent dev test environment, you probably want an SDK with a series of APIs to go and talk to Azure. And so on exactly that note, we have a sneak preview of something I don't think it's ever been shown before at a TechEd or a conference. This is the first time anyone's seen it. Brady Gaster from the Windows Azure team is going to show us a little bit about this brand new Azure Service Management SDK, a sneak preview of something that's coming real soon. Brady.
Very Australia today. A little bit of Wolf Mother, the flag, et cetera, et cetera. First thing I want to say is thank you, Mr. Coetzee, for bringing us out here. Thanks for a great presentation, Ed. You put the Ed in Tech Ed. And I think Mads has kind of made everybody in the web audience pretty excited about some stuff that you're going to be able to do, right? So you're going to have to deploy your website somewhere, aren't you? You guys just got to run localhost, right? All right. Well, I'm going to show you how you can do that. And as Andrew pointed out, what I'm going to be showing you is not how to use the portal. It's a great portal. It's really easy to use, a lot of fun to use. But I'm a programmer, and I like to do some of this stuff in code. So one of the things that Ed pointed out is how we're going to give you added benefits for your dev test scenarios. I was actually really happy to see so many hands go up for people that have used their MSDN benefits for Azure. Sorry, parched. So that's really exciting. But what I'm going to show you today is how you'd be able to automate some of that stuff using our new SDK. I know one of the questions is, when's it coming out? The answer is a typical Microsoft answer, really soon. But I can tell you that it is really soon. I'm one of the PMs on the team. And believe me, I don't get any sleep because we're constantly working on this to get it out the door as soon as possible. All right, how many Azure users in the room? Not asking rhetoric questions here. So, awesome, awesome. Good to see. How many of you use Azure for your dev test environments? Okay, good to see. As he pointed out, one of the things that you can do with your MSDN benefits is actually use Windows Azure for your dev and test and pretty much get that for free. Anybody ever set up a CI server in here? Yeah, I have two. It's really fun, right? All right. We don't like doing that stuff. One of the things that we're talking about today is stuff that developers love. Stuff that developers love means stuff that developers don't have to do. We're lazy people. We want it to be easy. We want to have an API or an SDK. The Windows Azure API is huge. We've got all these different things out there that you can do. So you could either walk through the MSDN documentation, which is pretty good, walk through the MSDN documentation to see how all those API calls look, all the XML payloads that you're going to have to send over and get back. Then you're going to have to write all that guts code. You're going to have to write HTTP client code. You're going to have to write XML parsing or JSON parsing code. Sound familiar? Sound fun? Yeah, I didn't think so. So we're going to make that a little bit easier for you. We're actually going to give you a client-side SDK that you'll be able to use. We're going to be building this, or we are building this, or we have built it, in what I like to call a pickle. Anybody know what a pickle is? Portable class library. Anybody know what the value of that is? You'll be able to run it on your phone. So you'll be able to take part of the SDK that we're going to give you in .NET, you'll be able to run that on your phone, you'll be able to run that on any of the platforms that support PCL. Guess what else we're going to give you? The Node version, the PHP version, the Java version, on and on and on. Think of all the languages that Windows Azure supports. Those are all the languages that we're going to give you in the Service Management SDK. So today I'm going to show you a very sneak preview of this. You are literally the first people to ever see it. I've got a simple little project here in VS. I'm just going to open it up real quick. And I need to put a couple breakpoints in here because I know you want to see the code actually running so that you know it's not smoke and mirrors. I'm going to put a bunch of breakpoints throughout here. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to run this guy. Before I do that, I want to show you the portal. I have nothing in the portal. This is my live portal. I have nothing in it other than my Windows Active Directory account. It's the only thing I've got out there. I'm just going to hit F5, and what we're going to do is we're going to fire up a little console app. First thing that console app is going to do, it's going to reach out to the Windows Azure API. It's going to new up a couple of management clients. What we're going to be giving you is a different management client for each aspect of the Windows Azure architecture. Today I'm going to show you how to use two of those, the one for websites and the one for SQL Server. Think about this in a unit test environment. Since it's all .NET code, you could, and I have, written these things as unit tests. You check them in the TFS, you do your build, your unit tests run, and you actually use the Service Management SDK to do things like create a website, create a database, create a storage account, deploy your code, then use your coded UI test to hit your site and make sure that it's working, and then most importantly, destroy it all. That way, it's only there while you need to use it in your tests. What does that mean for you? A, you don't have to set up a CI server. Good thing. B, your boss isn't going to get mad at you because you're spending all this money in the cloud, because you're only going to use it when you're using it. It's good stuff. That's the idea behind the cloud. So I've got a little DOS prompt here, or a command line prompt that says, press enter to create a website. So I'm going to hit that, and I'm going to show you what this looks like. I'm just going to step into this code, and what you'll see, oops, didn't want to go into there. This could get ugly. Okay, so I'm just going to new up a new URI, and I'm going to pass it a URL that I'm going to send up to the site that I want to get created. And right here, websites.create, I'll zoom in on that. Might help if I open this up. I want to show you the syntax for that. I can never get it to run. So that's going to go out and actually create the site. If I were to flip back to the portal, so there we go. Site's been created. All right. What I want to do real quickly is go over to the portal and hit refresh. And what you're going to see is that site that I said I was going to create is already out there. I've just created a brand new site with a couple of lines of code using the client-side SDK. And if I were to hit browse on this guy real quick, you're going to get your default, your site has been created. Now, we're going to be looking at the HTML for this very briefly. So I want to show you a view source so you know what you're looking at. That's a Base64 encoded image. I'm only going to point that out so you know that I'm not actually pulling down binary code. I just want to show you that that's just a Base64 encoded image, and that's this image right here. We do that so we have fewer assets to basically deploy. All right, so that's all run. It's all good. And now I want to, did I just kill all my breakpoints? I did, didn't I? Sorry about that. Let's go ahead and run it. All right, so that's going to run. It's going to go out and it's going to see, is my website running? That's basically just going to make one quick SDK API call out to the thing to see if the site is running. And to do that, I'm just going to pass in the name of my site. And it's going to tell me whether or not that site's running. Looks like it is. Everything is good to go. So my site is indeed running. Now I enter again. One more line of code to stop my site. Making calls out to the Windows Azure Fabric through this SDK to actually stop and start my sites. So right there, site is not running. If I were to go back to the portal and hit refresh one more time, I promise there won't be a lot of refreshes. I don't have browser link connected to Windows Azure yet. But that's a good idea for an extension. We could do this. So now my site is indeed stopped. If I hit browse there, we're going to get a 404. It's not going to run. So that's good to go. So I've stopped my site. Now I'm going to restart it. Again, one line of code just to restart that guy. One line of code to check to see if it's running. If you've set up a CI server, did you like that better? Okay. All right, here's one more. Is the website content valid? Real quickly, it's kind of a lame piece of code here. Just imagine you've got a coded UI test here. This is like a poor man's coded UI test. I'm just going to go out and look at the content for my site and see if what I expect to see is what I see. I want to see welcome to Tech Ed Australia because that's what my manager told me he wants the site to say. This can't be good. Wonder how hard it is to push code using this. I'm going to publish the site, and when I do that, I'm actually going to be pushing it out using FTP. I'm using a NuGet package here to actually FTP my code. And what I've got is just a simple little HTML file right here. You'll see that that site has been published. Right here, I'm going to make the call again just to check and see what the content looks like. There's our new code. Now, if I go back over to my browser again, hit F5. Welcome, everybody. All right. Now, here's where it gets kind of trippy. That's not very complicated. I just pushed up an HTML file, big whoop, over FTP. You could grab a NuGet package and do that yourself in an hour. Now I'm going to create a SQL Server server. I'm going to fire up a brand new SQL Server in the cloud using an API call. Okay? And that code is going to be right here. I killed my breakpoint, so you're just going to have to trust me that that's actually going to do its thing. I'm going to go back over here and close that down. There it is. All right, now I've created a brand new SQL Server. If I go over here into servers, hit F5, this SDK is faster than the portal. The portal can't update. Give me a break, Brady. All right, so you'll see here that I've got servers. I've got a brand new server in there. No databases yet. Go ahead and hit enter. I'm going to go out. I'm going to create a brand new database. Let me show you how complicated that code looks like. Create database. One line. Pretty simple, huh? And once I'm done, one line of code to 86 that server. Pardon me, I used to work in the restaurant industry. Delete that server. All right? So go ahead and hit enter here. Now I'm going to delete my website. Once that's done, Do I have a breakpoint set? I'm going to go out, make an API call, delete the site. Now I'm going to delete the SQL database. And I'm done. Now, if I go back to the portal and hit F5 one more time, I go to all items. That might help us kind of make the point a little bit clearer. Go all items right here. You should only see one thing, and that is my Windows Azure Active Directory in there again. So in 10 minutes, I've used the SDK with less than 100 lines of code to reach out to the Windows Azure Fabric, create a new website, publish code to that website, create a database server, then delete everything. You could do all that for free with your MSDN benefits. Imagine using Windows Azure as your dev test environment. You can basically push out your code, run all your coded UI tests, tell your manager you're good, and whether you're using Windows Azure for production or not, you know you're good because you've just tested everything out and you're set to pop. I'm Brady Gaster. I hope you guys enjoy TechEd. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, man. That's awesome stuff. Oh, look, cool. this automation of Azure is such a key thing for us as developers. It's really the missing link, if you like, and because it makes all the difference.
And we're going to give you this for hosted services, VMs, IaaS, everything. I've actually got code that would take a little bit too long to run here. It'll actually deploy a brand new storage account, put your package file out, build a hosted service, hit it, and everything. So you can do everything in Azure through this SDK.
That's cool. Awesome. Thanks, man.
Take care.
Cheers. Brady's got some sessions during the week. That you should definitely get along and see, along with all of the other fantastic content in the Azure track and some of the other tracks as well. So, I promised you three corp speakers from guys who are actually building the product. So we did that. That's fantastic, and I hope that you agree that, you know, that's very, very neat stuff. But what about actually building stuff with the product? What about taking what these guys have done and producing something that makes you money? Well, we have amongst us one of Australia's top game developers, I guess, based on downloads and sales. Ladies and gentlemen, the brains behind Game Dev Tycoon, Mr. Patrick Klug.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. Mate, thanks for joining us. This is a great story. I love this story. For those of you who haven't downloaded Game Dev Tycoon, I strongly encourage you to do so. I also strongly encourage you to wait until at least later on this evening, preferably probably after TechEd, because it's going to consume 20 hours of your life, no matter what. And certainly, I have to say that there was a day that I just can't remember sometime late last week because I was playing this game. It is an awesome game. So Game Dev Tycoon is pretty much a simulation game where you build... It's like you start a game startup.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a bit meta. So but, that's cool.
You start in the 80s in your garage, and you work on the G64 and the PC and create some games and then sell them into the virtual world, and you get virtual reviews and make virtual money. So that's
it actually is
how the game works.
It's very cool. So it's interesting. This is the first simulation that was in the Windows Store.
Yes, we were in fact quite lucky. Last year, when Windows 8 was announced, we approached some Microsoft evangelists and Nick Hotch, in fact, and we said, well, we have this idea. We want to be on the store, and luckily enough, we made it into the dev preview, and it was a light version. Some of you might have seen it, and later on in December, we published a full version on the Windows 8 store, and since then, we have moved also on other platforms, on Mac, Linux, and since last week, we have been on Steam, so it's been quite a ride.
I bet. It's awesome. Now, those of you, I'm sure that I can see all the cogs turning in people's heads. Hang on. 60,000, 80,000 paid slash trial, 30% of those got converted to $8 each. Hang on, you just made some money.
Well, Microsoft has a cut too, though.
Oh, that's true. So interestingly, I wanted to get to that. Microsoft did make a cut, but I think you've gone over the threshold where we're taking less of your money.
Yeah, for quite some time. Yeah, It's because many don't know that, but most app stores take 30%. Microsoft takes 30% at the start, but once you get over a certain amount, you get they only take 20%, which makes a huge difference, of course, to small businesses.
This is really cool.
And I was really surprised by the conversion rate, because I was I used to work for commercial software downloadable from the internet, and the conversion rate is single digit there. So to get a conversion rate of 30% is fantastic.
It's a phenomenal rate, really. Mm. I mean, fantastic is just an understatement. Yeah, very, very cool stuff. The nice thing about Game Dev Tycoon is it's actually written from the ground up in HTML and JavaScript.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So why did you choose that?
Well, I came from WPF and C#. first. And, well, part of it, I guess, was a bit of WPF fatigue. I say that in, in public, but anyway. The other part is that we thought, well, we want to maybe move to other platforms as well, and HTML JavaScript just seemed like an interesting way to go. And for someone who has never written any HTML JavaScript, it was quite an interesting journey to do that. But we were super impressed because, you know, as a C# developer, you're used to debugging, you're used to all the IntelliSense support in Visual Studio, and the HTML JavaScript development is essentially the same. I mean, you sit down, you write your code, you hit a five, you can do mostly the same things, and it's a really great experience.
That's really neat. And so, I love this quote you've got here at the bottom. I've never worked in a more productive technology once you know CSS. And I love the little caveat, by the way. Once you know CSS, that's what you've got to do.
I think it took me 4 hours to stack two buttons. Oh, well.
Excellent. The other interesting thing here was that you guys decided to start with Visual Studio Express. You didn't need to buy any software at all to do this thing.
Yeah, we were in a hurry because we wanted to get it done by the Windows 8 launch, and we just grabbed the first thing we could get. And since we were a new business, that was Express. And we never had the need, really, to upgrade since then. We did a lot of stuff. We did remote debugging, you know, performance tuning on Surface and all of that, and it all worked beautifully. So,
I think it's a great story. So you really don't... We encourage you to invest heavily in our tooling, of course, but perhaps only after you've made a bunch of money out of the store. that's a great thing. Some of this stuff is really, really clever. We're only showing you still shots of the game at the moment, but the animation is remarkably fluid. It's flawless. There's some great images that come up in here. The isometric drawings are stunning, I think, is probably a good way to put it, given the genre. I'm really excited about the way this stuff works. One of the interesting things that happens is when you release this game for Windows Desktop, you release two versions.
Yeah, that's probably how we are more known, not by that game, but by that story. Essentially what happened, you know, in the Windows Store, you don't really have to worry about publishing. You package the thing up, you check a whole bunch of countries that you want to release, and then Windows takes care of the rest. The Windows Store. When we decided that we want to publish it ourselves, we thought, oh, well, you know, it's only a matter of time before pirates will take your game and host it on BitTorrent. So the question was, what do we do with it? And what we decided to do is we created a cracked version ourselves, which was the same as the full version, except when you play it, after two hours of playtime, your in-game company would go bankrupt because of piracy. Like, you would be hit on and on again by pirates. And then you wouldn't make any money. And there was no banner that said, you know, this is pirated, or please buy me. That was it. And we thought, well, it's holding up a mirror and people would get it. Didn't turn out that way. We had a whole bunch of players coming online on our forums or on other forums complaining about that they go bankrupt because of piracy, who themselves pirated the game, of course. And you know, they were saying like things like, can I research DRM or something, or what's, you know, there's no point in investing in new technology because I can't make my money back and things like that. It was.
This is an awesome story, and I think it's very cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, of course, the sad side of it was we had some tracking information, so we knew how many people were using the pirated version and how many bought the game on the first day. And the numbers were 214 bought the game, and over 3,100 played the pirated version, so it was 93%. Although the good side is, since then, of course, this story, I published a blog post, you know, created a lot of attention to the game, and it has changed significantly since then, which was great for us, of course.
That's awesome, man.
But it was a bit of a wake-up call to the realities of publishing your own game.
yeah, absolutely. So this is the other interesting thing, that you've gone into the Windows Store and kind of experienced the thing, the ease of publishing stuff there by checking boxes, as you say, and collecting money that way. Is there anything you'd change if you did it again from the start? What would you change? Anything?
Well, I think it's great because, you know, as a developer, you want to focus on your product. You don't want to think about tax treaties in all over the world or whether you have to do VAT or GST or whatever. So it's really convenient to just develop it, give it to Microsoft, they certify it and publish it. And the fact is, you can always go further than that. I think the Windows Store was a great start for us, and I'm really happy still with how we did it.
So. That's awesome. So what's next for you guys?
Well, we just published a game on Steam on the 29th. That was massive. And I think I will take a little break. I'm getting married next month, so. And then afterwards. So I'm glad I made the Steam release in time. that was the deadline, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, but we're having we have some new ideas, and
awesome.
Hopefully we'll be back.
So I've got one little last question. So when you say you've got some ideas, it's you and one other guy?
Yeah, my brother. I mean, we have some contractors to do artwork and stuff like that. But yeah, the company is based in Brisbane, where I live, and my brother is in Austria, where I'm originally from, as you might guess. And we work like, you know, with a 15,000 kilometer distance and 8 hour time difference.
I find that works best with my brother too.
Well, we try to work in the same room one day. Yeah. Sometimes we are more effective, I think, if we just have to talk for 1 hour and then go on. Yeah, it's good.
That's really cool, man. So Patrick will be around all week. He'll be in the dev den. I'll tell you a bit more about the dev den later on. But he'll be in the dev den. Please hunt him down and ask him questions about some of this stuff. He's got a treasure trove of great knowledge about how to do these sorts of things. He's obviously been... Well, I think wildly successful is not an overstatement in publishing in the store. And he's, I think, one of the great examples of the ability for pretty much anyone to take the knowledge they've got as a developer and really leverage that to build something they believe in and can be really proud of. So congratulations again, mate. Thank
you
very
much.
So that's a great example, as I said, of an indie developer doing some very cool stuff in Australia. And I'll say, please track Patrick down and have a chat to him, because he's got some great stories. I'll move on from there to something that we did with one of Australia's largest brands, Ticketek. And I'd love to show you a thing that we did, Built to Roam and Pixel and Sons, who are two of, Pixel and Sons is a sort of umbrella company for Shane Morris and Nick Randolph, who are two of our local developer heroes for Windows Phone and Windows 8. Both of those guys will be speaking, by the way, here at TechEd, and I couldn't recommend their sessions highly enough. They collaborated to build an awesome experience for Ticketek. And for those of you who haven't seen it, Ticketek released over the weekend on both Windows and Windows Phone simultaneously. And I'm going to give you a little sneak preview of what this looks like. I'm not going to show you all of it, because although it's in the store now, they're in both stores now, we're having an official press release, a press event on Thursday to launch it properly. So I'm not going to show you all of the cool features. But I do want to point out some of the things that are very cool about building for both the Windows platform and the Windows Phone platform simultaneously. So this is Ticketek. This is the Ticketek app in the Windows Store Ticketek app, and it knows we're in Queensland, so it's brought up the information that's going on around Australia, but based around the Queensland area. So if we wanted to go to a concert, perhaps the Justin Bieber concert, because I'm sure we all want to go to that, and we need to buy a ticket for that, we can take advantage of a bunch of things that happen in the platform itself. So if I were to go to the Brisbane Entertainment Centre here, I don't know if you noticed that the map over here updated. I can tap on the map, and there we have a neat rendition of this. This is using the Bing Map service behind the scenes to give us an aerial view with the current traffic around the venue. All of those things available in real time as part of the process that goes on. So this is a really neat implementation of this modern design language that we're talking about. And you'll see that it's a really nice look and feel. There's a very consistent feel to this. But that's not the only place that we do this. So I'm just going to take a moment to power this phone on and dismiss all the reminders that are coming up for me. And then we'll switch across to Elmo here. And here's the same app, essentially the same app, running on my Nokia Lumia 920. The 920 is a lovely phone, but the thing that makes this really lovely is that almost exactly the same, in fact, the same app is running behind the scenes. The engine is identical. It's written using a portable class library, the same way as we talked about with the portable class library that Brady was talking about. The idea is that the portable class library runs on both the phone and on the Windows version. But what the design guys have done such a good job of is taking what we saw on the Windows version and surfacing it in a way that makes sense on this particular form factor. So many of the things are similar, and all the data are coming from the same places. But now, instead of a whole block for concerts, we just have a small control that slides through the top three concerts. If I tap on one of that concerts, then it'll bring up all the concerts that are available. And again, I can go to my Justin Bieber show, and I can still go and go to the Brisbane Entertainment Centre. I've still got mapping, but it's a different mapping from the other platforms. This is the Bing Maps on the phone, as opposed to on the PC, and this shows the power of being able to do stuff behind the in the engine behind the scenes and take advantage of the platform for the things the platform does well. We do things like show video, and I wonder if this will work. We haven't tried this with 800 people in the room. Oh, there we go. There's the video that these guys will show. I haven't showed the sound, but that's streaming down off the net, again, over my 3G connection. And all of that capability is built directly into the application. And lots of this stuff is going on using the same code as you saw behind, the same code for both platforms, which is very, very powerful. I'm going to be doing a session on Build for Both on Thursday. So if you want to come and learn more about building for both Windows Phone and Windows 8 simultaneously, please come along to that session on Thursday. I'm looking forward to talking a whole lot more about that. Another one of the things you're going to hear us talking a lot about in the next little while is the concept of failing often, iterating fast, and getting better and better and better as we go. This concept of practice makes perfect. So today we're announcing a competition that we're running in Australia to encourage you to write apps and put them in the store and practice deploying and writing apps. This is called we're calling it Apptember, or the September of Apps, for want of a better term. If you go to aka.ms/apptember, there's a whole bunch of terms and conditions and details about how to enter, or you can come and see any of us on the showcase floor or in the dev den, and we'll give you some more details. But basically, if you submit apps, you'll be in the running to win Nokia phones, either 925 or the 520, Xboxes. And so what we really want to do is we want to give you enough incentive that you can start your practice and continue to practice your craft. And we don't expect you to do that, you know, without any expectation of reward. So what we'd like you to do is get involved as part of this process and put some apps in the store and work out how easy it is, and think about, you know, which apps might be wildly successful, and have a play, experiment, do some testing. We've also got our friends at Nokia who have got this great site called develop.com, which is basically a reward site, a frequent flyer site for developers. It's rewards for developing developers is what we've christened it. And really, but what this does is it gives you the ability to go onto that site, register, and you receive points, what they call XP for some reason. I don't know what that means. Yes, I do. You get XP for doing things from simple things as simple as watching a video and asking some questions, all the way up to things as perhaps complex as having the best rated app in the store this month, and everything in between. And the points can get retrieved for hardware, and obviously there's a bunch of great Nokia hardware, and a whole lot of other great point redemption offers. And again, this is to encourage you to play with this technology, to work out how this stuff works for you, and to incentivize you a bit to just go that extra mile and watch that extra video or develop that extra app. And we think that there's some very cool stuff that you can get done with this. Many of you will know that Scott Guthrie will be here tomorrow. This is one of a pretty exciting things for me. Last time Scott was here, I think it was about 2006, and he's gone up several pay grades since then, but he's still a geek at heart, and that's one of the things I love about having Mr. Guthrie here. And to celebrate the fact that Scott's here, we're having an intimate lunch with just Scott and a few of his friends, and we have some invitations to give out to that event. So there's the red polo shirt with the special Scott Guthrie Jason on it is what we're using to invite people to this event. And the first person I'd like to invite to the Scott Guthrie event is, of course, Patrick Klug. So, Patrick.
Cheers.
Thanks, man. I'd love to see you there tomorrow. The Thursday. So, pop that on. If you wear that on Thursday, we'll let you into the
Jason,
arena.
Good.
Yeah, thanks, man. If you do want a red shirt, and literally there's only a limited number of them, I think less than 100, then you need to come and find one of us evangelists and have a chat to us about how you get a shirt. And we'll have a chat to you about the sort of things that we'd like to get from you in return, if for want of a better way of putting it. So please do come and find us. Nick Hodge, Mike Kordahi, Dave Glover, myself, Rocky Heckman. Frankie Moore might have a couple as well. Lachlan Hardy, find us in the dev den. Find us around the showcase, and we'll have some of those things. So please do come and see that. I have been mentioning this thing called the Dev Den, and I want to make sure that you guys know about what that is. We're not going to start the keynote for a little while. You don't have to go just yet. It's okay. The Dev Den is all about a place where developers can come and hang out. We've got things that developers need, like power and ice cream. We've got other developers to kind of be boastful and lazy with, which is kind of nice. Most of the developer speakers will be hanging out there while they're not giving their sessions. The idea is that if you're not in the session, come and hang out in the dev den. Cut some code. Don't cut some code. Learn about some new things. Teach some other people about some new things. It's basically a place where we can hang out as developers and swap great ideas and learn and teach. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's down on the showcase floor. You can't miss it. It's a great big Perspex room, and it's pretty cool. So please go and do that. Now, my next slide is my last slide, but before I get to that, I just want to point out a couple of logistical things. From here, we're going into the keynote. Now, the keynote is actually in there, but the way we're going to get there is we're going to get up there and left and left and left to get around, because that's the way we get in there. So after the end of this, and I promise we won't start the keynote without you, what you're going to do is we'll hop up, go back out the doors you came in, around to the left, follow the crowd, and we'll get in there. We've actually set aside a bunch of that keynote room for developers, so the IT pros didn't get to pinch all the good seats. I think that was a good thing. Well done to the organisers. That's awesome. And I'm going to leave you with one last thought about TechEd. And this is if there was one thing I was going to leave you with about TechEd, it's this. TechEd is all about drinking deep. You get a week away from the office to get invigorated, to get inspired, to get excited, and to get really, really pumped about being a developer. And if you go home with any energy left, you've wasted that energy. I strongly encourage you to go to sessions, go and do hands-on labs, hang out in the dev den, talk to other people, go to the parties, make sure you introduce yourself to the people sitting next to you, because TechEd is an opportunity that comes in Australia only once a year, and I'd strongly encourage you to seize it with both hands. Thank you very much. Thanks, Rick.
Smell.